cap, please?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Todd Anderson, the sheriff of Tillamook County. And seated to my left is Tom Manning, who is our emergency management director. And I want to thank all of you for coming down to Tillamook today and representing, you know, districts throughout the state and hearing us on some very important issues. I think throughout the day you're going to hear the common theme of emergency preparedness. Later on, we're going to talk about the 911 bill. And I know it's a commitment for all of you to be out of Salem for a full day, especially when things are hot and heavy. I know you're missing all the lobbyists who would be knocking your day and calling you. So I hope you enjoy your time here in Tillamook. I've been asked to talk briefly about our emergency operations plan. And we were very fortunate is that we had an emergency operations plan, but there were a lot of room for improvements in that. And as a community group of community partners, which were our first responders, including the hospital, EMS, they have the ambulance service, our fire departments, fire chiefs, fire defense force, law enforcement, the 911 district, we all sat down and said, you know what, instead of us going in and putting in for grants as a, you know, every one of us is a separate entity, let's sit down and talk about, you know, what exactly does Tillamook County need to prepare our first responders to allow our citizens to have an idea of what they're going to do and be prepared for any kind of disaster. Because, you know, when you talk about an all-hazard situation, Tillamook County is your poster child for all hazards. We have, you know, the flooding, we have landslides, we're in a tsunami area. You know, we've seen wildfires. We have a significant windstorm that everybody saw in mid-December. And so we were fortunate enough to be one of, I think, the original five or six counties that received Homeland Security dollars to fund the renewing and the upgrading of our emergency operations plan. And one of the things this did is by having the same vendor who the state went out and did the RFP for us, again, the vendor, was it allows not only Tillamook County to have a similar emergency operations plan, but it allows those six other entities, which are both other counties, their tribes, to have similar emergency operations plans. So, you know, we are kind of going the direction of getting on the same page with other agencies. So if somebody needs to respond down to Tillamook, or vice versa, if we end up having to go to the metropolitan area and in assisting, hopefully we're heading the same direction. And our emergency operations plan, first what we did is we identified all the partners that would be involved in this, and that would include all the local governments, including the city that are incorporated in both those unincorporated areas, talking with partners that everything from the hospital to Oregon Department of Forestry, to our public utility district and electricity operations, and sitting down and saying, you know, what can we do to best prepare our county for an all-hazards event? And, you know, this could be the natural disaster that I spoke about briefly prior to, or it could be a terrorist event. And some of the I guess, upgrades that we're seeing in our emergency operations plan, and we have the rough draft, and is that correct, Tom? We have the rough draft at this point, and we're making changes, and the vendor is making those changes for us. But some of the gaps that we've discovered in our policy is that the National Incident Management System, or NIMS, which incorporates the Incident Management System, you know, we didn't have this throughout our emergency operations plan. And so what everybody has been doing as far as first responders in Tillamook, including my deputies, my office staff, fire departments, both volunteer and paid fire members, is that we've been taking the NIMS courses that number one, that teach everybody about incident response and how we're going to work under that incident response or incident command system. And so, you know, we're teaching from, you know, the clerical staff all the way up to, you know, the top in our organization, as well as throughout the fire agencies, what that plan and how the NIMS system works. Now, I think that most everybody probably is aware, in order for any entities as of this year to receive Homeland Security dollars for things like planning, response equipment for disasters, that we have to be NIMS compliant now as of 07, or else you're not eligible for those federal Homeland Security dollars. And so we've met that bar, and we're continuing. We're offering the upper level courses, actually, I believe it's NIMS 3400, is that correct, to executives to come in to further prepare us for the disaster. The all-hazard emergency operations plan addresses natural hazards, but also, like we said, the technological hazards is terrorism, hazardous materials, and accidents. We also talk about dam failures. We talk about animals and agricultural hazards. The plan also identifies the primary local agency and support agencies through emergency support plans. It's a comprehensive plan, like I said, we've had a lot of input from all of those entities, from the first responders to the city managers to the mayors of all our incorporated and unincorporated cities, as well as businesses that are actively involved in this. And unfortunately, Tillamook has had the opportunity to exercise our plan several times. Early November, we had the flooding event. Mid-December, we had the wind event. I'll tell you, these real-life practices tells us that, we had areas where we were deficient and areas where we could actually do much, much better. And the facility that you're sitting in right now, the 911 Communications District, with this emergency operations plan, we formed an overhead team. And we took the decision-makers for emergency response with somebody from the fire defense board or a fire chief, somebody from my office, Tom from emergency management. We had the public works department in here. We had representatives from PUD and ODOT involved. And so when these events occurred, we had people in here that could make decisions. And much like I guess it would be a joint incident command system that we had going on in here. And what we found is that our response was quicker, that with agency executives in here that we could make decisions on, the number of rescues. And for instance, in our flooding event, we had over 100 rescues of individuals that were made. And that was joint operations between the U.S. Coast Guard, our Marine deputies rescued over 30 people. Tillamook Fire Department was involved in those rescues. And it was a coordinated effort which happened here. And a lot of what we've seen is with this emergency operations plan, it gives us some very specific guidelines how we should operate and respond and be the best responders for our community in these events. And what it's also done is it's opened up a lot of discussions with the partners, and that's the city agencies as well as the first responders. And what we found is it's kind of like everybody else is that, when you sit down and you talk about things, you communicate with everybody who's going to be responding, that your response is much more efficient, it's much more adequate, and we're improving. We sat down and have been every couple of weeks with this overhead team meeting and said, what do we need to respond better to the next emergency? And all of us that are working with this first response from emergency management off the emergency operations plan we're basically outfitting this to be our new emergency operations center. We're adding phone lines into the center. We have computer terminals. We have people in here from Aries and Races, which is the ham radios and for radio operators. And the whole infrastructure will be running out of here. And in part, we're looking at the secondary. We're thinking ahead now by talking that, if we lose 911, something happens to them, what do we do? So our emergency operations center that we have at the sheriff's office, we're updating with equipment that has been used here in 911, but has been updated with better equipment. We're going to be putting that in our emergency operations center at the sheriff's office, so we have redundancy. So if we do lose one or the other, then we have a second center to dispatch to use our warlord as well for any kind of disaster. We work in our emergency operations plan on prevention. We talk about protection and preparedness, mitigation, and Bill Campbell from Community Development is going to talk to you a little bit more about our hazard mitigation plan, but our emergency operations plan also discusses what do we do to prevent that the next flood is not nearly as bad, or what can we do to help our citizens so they don't suffer as much, because with the flooding that we've had over the years, the mitigation work that's been done, and you will hear more about that, to save businesses, residences in the county millions of dollars. But there's a lot more work to be done. There's a lot more things we can do for the mitigation work. Like I said, it's been a huge step having that, because having somebody from the outside look in and help you develop your emergency operations plan has been pivotal in us getting something this quickly, because our agencies are so small, to take one or two full-time people and put them into an effort to develop a plan like this would be nearly impossible. So we just about got the new plan. Unfortunately, we've had real-life practices, exercises that led to over 100 emergency rescues. And just yesterday, we planned for a real-life event that we're going to be drilling. And what we're going to do is we're going to take the latest windstorm that we had in mid-December, and we're going to get the call log from our computer automated dispatch system here of every call that came in, and we're going to have people calling in, making mock calls to our dispatch center, and we're going to respond. So now that we have our plan, we're doing what we're supposed to do, is take it back, it's an exercise in a time when it's not an emergency.
Yes, sir.
What kind of warning do you think you
doesn't work. You know, the old plug-in phone works, but our cordless ones now,
don't work. So many people got rid of their old phones, so they have no phone service. And so it got to the point where there was one radio station in the community that has generated power. And that was our only source to get information out to folks, other than the local fire departments. And like Tom had mentioned before, a shelter was opened in Tillamook. A shelter was opened in Garibaldi. I believe they opened a shelter up in North County also. But a lot of folks, you know, weren't used to the power going out for a long time. And it was days here on the coast. It was 3 to 5 days in many, many areas. And we made some mistakes that, you know, we closed the emergency operations center down way too soon. We should have kept it open longer because, you know, after the windstorm was going and we had the shelters set up, there was no power, and that was still an emergency to many people.
The hospital has a generator.
They have a generator, but they found out in this instance that it wasn't sufficient, and they're actually working on tripling the output of new generators now, because keeping the hospital heated, all portions of it, you know, that emergency lighting, but to keep the patients warm, they had to get more generated power. And we're doing the same here at 911, is updating our generator to a higher level. So instead of, you know, the operations center and the training room, which we were using as the overhead team room, we want this whole building to be able to use for that emergency operations center. But we talked about, you know, one of the things that we learned from the windstorm event, because it had been a long time since we've been out of power for 5 days in our filament, is that, you know, the very vulnerable citizens that we talked about earlier, the people that are on oxygen or dialysis, people on dialysis only have 48 hours. And so we sat down, you know, in our debrief and said, do we have a list of all those vulnerable people? So the first thing we can do when we've lost power for half a day is go knock on their door and see how they're doing. And our partners at the hospital said, you know what, that's a great idea. They come into the hospital, and the hospital here has home health care. Said, you know what, we can get a list, and that's ever-changing. You know, there's new people going on oxygen, new people going on dialysis, so they're actually working. So in the next event, they have a list, and the first responders, being the fire, emergency medical, or police, can go check on these folks who are at risk. So, and like I said, unfortunately, it takes a catastrophic event like this for us to notice something.
Turning out to do with what seems to be the obvious maybe the neighbor that's in the person is their neighbor
and the
we have about 5 minutes.
Is there anywhere have y'all compiled all the things that we've seen?
oxygen or a person who's on dialysis, do you have somebody to check on? Have you notified the hospital so they know the test? So, you know, we can compile a list and provide that to you.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
There was substantial flooding in Fulton County as well as other areas.
plan, the purpose here is to identify vulnerabilities, hazards, and describe mitigation procedures to reduce vulnerability. And each city has its own plan. And with that, then, all is developed, which is important to the county. And that provides a basis. And what kind of project? Each city prioritizes their project, their hazards, and this is the top priority. Projects, and these are our top priorities. That's been looked at on a broad county basis. And the steering committee comprised of representatives from the jurisdiction provides guidance for the prioritization and selection. Each city within the plan may have five proponents that they can clean up on their own. Stop the city from taking jurisdiction, pursuing resources to find a paramount importance to them that provides the basis of coordination and how they plan to do the jurisdiction. Our process is pretty simple. We want some dedicated consultants to keep them more than the hours that they can seven cities and do that for $3,000 and then $2,000. And that's really how we did that. We provided a jurisdictional questionnaire for each jurisdiction. They formed planning committees for each city. We formed planning committees to help them identify infrastructure. to engage in it. It must be up there every 5 years. During that interval period, the steering committee will continue to grow the special districts, all other entities in the county, and everybody to increase the total of the resources and organizations. Keep adding to our political services and using excess dollars from the collective government. Thank you. very heavily dense organization area. A lot of those houses are for 100 foot. And someday, the combination of heavy snows and followed by rains, so it's going to flood those neighborhoods. It hasn't since then. This house right on the paper, you think of it or something. I must be covered with loss dollars. When you purchase that property, then this community owns it. You make sure nothing's going to be put back in there again, or you build it. You have codes that say you have to build it up in stilts. How do you handle that?
If you acquisition program,
anybody here who has not seen the annual fundraising center, thank you.
lights went off. It's not a test. This is the real thing. And it was after that event that we really made the decision that we needed something, another tool in our toolbox to warn people about emergency events in our community. Fresh in our mind was the Indonesian tsunami in December of 2004. So some people became very instrumental in facilitating this process. Mayor Shirley Feldkirchen is here, Commissioner Labhart, Sheriff Anderson, my board members, John Eckhart and Paula Tucker, both here as well. All of these people really held my feet to the fire to get this project going, and they championed the project, and they were very supportive of the process. Shirley was able to make contact with one of her colleagues, Dan Dawson, who works for a company called 21st Century Communications. And 21st Century provides emergency notification systems. And she was able to sort of facilitate a 90-day trial of their system. And in January of 2006, we actually did a countywide reverse 911 call to some 18,000 homes in our community. According to 21st Century, that was the first countywide test that they were aware of west of the Mississippi. And so one night we all gathered in this room and had a PowerPoint projector and watched it happen. And really the purpose of the test was to see if our telephone infrastructure could handle that number of calls in a short period of time, which lasted 12 to 15 minutes. After that, we decided that the board made a decision that this is a direction we needed to go, and we moved forward with an RFP process, and we ended up selecting a company called Reverse 911. They're actually a registered trademark name of Reverse 911, which is generically used for all or many notification systems. This was, we're using that actual company. Part of the reason we selected them, one of the main reasons we selected them, is they have to consider a hybrid system. Not only we have in our back room a box, which is the reverse 911 system, with a T1 phone line connected to it, 24 ports. And for a 30-second message, we can send out about 50 calls per hour. So for small call-outs, activating a search and rescue team, notifying a neighborhood of a police act. Smaller call-outs, we can use that system at no cost per call. And we can use it on a daily basis if we want to. The hybrid portion is what we call the mass call feature. And with the mass call feature, if there's a huge event like a tsunami or some other countywide sort of event, we want to make tons of notifications, thousands of phone calls very quickly. We use the mass call feature. It's a high volume option that uses phone lines that are outside of state, and they can deliver in 30 second messages about 4,000 calls per minute. And we have that ability as well. And that system, we'll use the high call option, the high volume option, there is a per call charge. So it's not something that we're going to use on a daily basis, but it's there to help with our community and alert them to different sorts of things. One of the other things that Reverse 911 has is they have a plan called Reverse91.net. And that means that if there's another neighboring community like Seaside or Lincoln City who decides that they're going to also use Reverse 911, we can share our T1 lines. So if we have an event, we can share, say, Seaside's T1 lines, and now we're making 100 calls per hour. And if Seaside has an event, they can move out. If we have an event at the same time, we each retain ownership over our own calls, and we won't interfere with them anymore. In the handout that I gave you, if you look on the first page of the colored handout, I just kind of took some screenshots of what an event would actually look like. And the first page is just an example of a hazardous materials event. One of the things that the system has the ability to do is to do what we consider a plume lock. So if we have a tanker driving down, let's see, it's 10th Main, and it's carrying a hazardous substance, and it becomes involved in a crash, and it receive all of the phones that are plotted in that area. The system will then start calling the ones that are closest to the event, move them out, and make the notification, whatever that notification will be. On the back side is an example of, for instance, a police event. If Sheriff Anderson has a subject barricaded in the house and the shots fired, he may choose to notify the residents to evacuate the shelter in place. And we can draw a circle, we can draw a polygon, a square, a rectangle. If he says, I want a half a mile radius around a specific address, it will automatically draw that for us. And then it plots all of the phone numbers in that area and the addresses. In the second picture, you can see that we can get information on a particular address. And let's say the incident is going on at Mrs. Clay's home. We can then take that address, put another circle around it at the bottom, and not allow that address to get a phone call. So the bad guy won't exactly know what the police are up to.
You're talking planning.
That is correct. The system, at this point, the technology is not available to call cell phones if it's an event such as this, where we're actually doing it geographically. If we're doing an event like the overhead team you heard us talk about earlier, we have every overhead team member listed in a
spend lots of money, right?
Look,
with the prototype real testing. It's a symbol acting a secret siren that says the alert is over, it wasn't a tsunami after all. Or, what do you think?
Is in the real event?
Well, you know, the government knows that. Some of the problems that are accepted.
Yes.
Well, I'm just looking at how you saw it. But where are the people going? Because the map is not even getting notified. Come back home.
And that's going to get times that they need to tune into the local radio stations, which provide that information. Our focus call is when we have a siren activation, we turn it into a tsunami siren on, we leave them on for a period. So it's not just like it goes off once and that's all you hear. It goes on for several minutes to help people get
there.
So then we turn the sirens off for one, and then we start the notification process to the media that the event is all clear.
actually sets the sunset at 2014. There was a former bill on that that actually did remove the sunset, and this was the compromise bill, so it's been put out in place. Better than it's been. Any questions for Mr. Rudolph, the mayor of the new?
Money's collected by the phone companies,
hiring people to work in the same book for like 12 or 13 times a month. So work is still out there, and the result is that we get help, the right help, the correct help, to the people faster because of this problem. So I appreciate the work that this committee has done in the meantime, and during this session, and the support that we've shown to introducing the bill that would have removed the sunset. However, we are certainly supportive of the solution for the community. We're going to have to work on this. Regarding the dating reverse 911, there has been a lot of discussion among the 911 workers in the state about how we can help them with that universal statewide, which is what the government is trying to do. We haven't identified a funding source for that or a way to make that occur, but it certainly would be a great idea. And it may be a funding scale, but then it would also be an extension of the community to be a very good idea.
Like to have control over it. Just to let it go and never talk about it again. sheriff to bring it to our attention that there was some skullduggery in Salem that might have tried to take other people's money. Thank you. I am well warned by law enforcement.
They're off to be alive.
Representative's comments and the other testimonies we wouldn't put on a whole lot to say if you didn't it's a well-run it's a program for the
driving south to the green light, it was dark as the wind. And there was a white dog, quite a large dog, on the side of the road near a rest area. And my daughter, who's worked with the shelter, the animal shelter, says that's often a place where people would drop them. And here's the dog, about five, and everybody's going 80 miles an hour. And it was bent over. The dog was poised right on the curve of the road, you know, and kept making jerky motions like it was going to run out between cars. And I got on the phone and was able to, within a minute, the dispatcher knew where I was and said she'd send someone out. And when I, seriously, when I went, I saw the lights, you know, coming and made the cross and everything, and that was within a minute right after that happened. So it was really handy to not have to drive several more miles. I was able to just do that. Okay. Thank you very much. And our last team will be, we're going to meet our time frames, but Otto Giesen and Mark Gassner. This one, Hospital 2369.
Thank you, Chair Boone and members of the committee. And for the record, I have the distinct honor and privilege of being the chair of the Potomac County Commission this year and representing the 25,000 people in our county. Before I actually start the testimony, I would like to personally thank each and every one of you for taking time to attend. I don't think the public realizes how blasted you are in terms of the public. Evening meetings, morning meetings, the distinct empathy, well, maybe not empathy, but recognize your workload and take almost an entire day, probably an entire day for many of you who are driving that. When you come to Telemark and spend some time with us, it is very much appreciated. And I want to thank you. I will be very short with my testimony because the first line pretty well says it. The compromise bill that you were looking at to support the extension of 911 tax to 2014 is a quarter of that. If you'll read a little bit further down, I have the same concern about having some form of oversight with things that we do in the county. The oversight that we would like to have with the 911 taxes is honorable. But there are other ways to do oversight. You could require reporting back to the legislature at every biennium, how the money's been spent. But I'm not going to go very far with that. I think the compromise of going to 2014 is an honorable compromise, and I would ask you to support it.
And Rip,
please. I want to go back to what you said, what Representative Crawford said. There was no testimony at all in Salem opposition to 911. I've been the state police 28 years, I understand the value of it. But the program has grown far beyond what we thought it would, and the number of phones and the amount of that connection. If it continues to do that, we have the responsibility as a legislature
started as an EMT in Eastern Oregon at a time when quite literally our calls were dispatched on the telephone. That was one place that someone always answered the telephone. And when that individual answered the telephone, they started down the list and started calling out personal numbers in hopes of finding someone who was at home answering their phone. Years I started a fundraising effort that actually gave us pagers, and that was really exciting to me because it was part of the fun for me. Basketball game facility and answer my calls. So I've been in support of 911 since we put this here.
Thank you. like a standpoint here.
Yes.
Oh, it's good.
Legislature. representative saying that I would just share with you that these bills I know about, and they might be something that you would bring up on your radar screen or ask my office or Representative Boone's office to track on your behalf. The big ones, though, because I don't even know the legislative concept number on the FERC reform, and that's my terminology. But the Oregon Inc. It is the proposal that I can give you the full packet of their information. They plan on developing a private not-for-profit in conjunction with Oregon State University. It is in the Vanguard of some of the late research. I can tell you there is right now an Oregon Solutions process. I'm looking at Steve Greenwood in the front row. There's an Oregon Solutions project in regard to the Reedsport area that I think you'll want to watch with interest because if I understand Oregon Solutions well, and I hope I do, they will be trying to yield a lasting template that can be applicable to other communities along the coast that are trying to develop wave energy. And they will be wrestling, and I would make correction from Steve if I'm straying from the truth here, but I think they will be wrestling with some of the orderly process questions and perhaps yielding instructional information to others who will follow after them. And this is a highly stylized Oregon Solutions process convened by the co-chair of this committee, Senator Joanne Burford. But I can easily share with you after the meeting those things that I'm aware of, and there may be many more that I'm not aware of, that could ultimately, both good and bad, affect what you're doing.
I don't want to get into any great detail. I'm interested, though,
has got a lot of work to do. And I'm wondering if he's going to apply for funding. But also, we're working on making it our own situation. Find the best science and the science. Find a group of all of those that have other important issues, including sport fishing, to try to identify essentially pre-zoned areas. Areas that will have the least or most mitigated impact. So we can essentially invite them and say, hey, you know what? We're ready for you. We've actually been in the industry on the site and the world where we get to the world of the project with other partners. We would like to be able to say, there is a part of success. Unfortunately, that doesn't begin with the first one. The other wrinkle that happened in the last couple is FERC had assumed, I believe, that it had exclusive jurisdiction in Missouri all around. So not just the territory of the city of Missouri, but also an important out-of-pocket shelter in the park. Well, unfortunately, the Department of Interior and the Inland Fisheries Service disagreed with the Missouri. So not only do we have various aspects of state and local government in the district and limiting some aspects of the planning that the federal government itself is agreeing about which is really the relevant question to use. I think we should be having a square peg into this weird round hole or this whole thing. It really doesn't make sense. Thankfully, I think Congress is starting to pay attention. We've been talking about the direction of organization and people who are thriving in the situation. I have drafted an informal initial draft. I'll receive your copy of your thoughts. A draft joint memorial that basically would reflect the legislators' desire to have Congress fix this. I believe, strongly believe, and as the days progress, my view becomes firmer and firmer, that Congress needs to amend the Federal Power Act to provide a specific set of factors that are just as appeal to the plan. To avoid the necessary conflicts, we can move this technology forward as rapidly as America needs to be able to do. Unfortunately, at the moment, I haven't got an abstract to move it forward quite as vigorously as I want to, but I'm certainly going to need your help. I know we're fast approaching deadlines for the final report and other things, but despite that, I think it's a good job to have a legislative statement that can solve it. Because you can only fix so much stuff. You can't fix
one more day.
What's that? One more day. I know we're out good in terms of dropping bills. But I am hopeful. I'm hopeful that we can get, and I think the state is in a very good place to make sure we do the things that we need to do. But keep in mind, we're talking about different technologies, some of which occur within the territory of what we call the direct wire cable, which is largely used to get out, essentially, the more electricity. But the more developed
three things to say as a result of your testimony. The first one is that it is extremely timely that you have brought us this, and I hope that the chair would be willing to act to have this committee be able to introduce this as a committee bill. We can get it back to Salem this afternoon. Some of us are flying back to Salem. We'd be happy to carry it back on behalf of the staff and make it by 5 o'clock. We're working against an extreme deadline, and so this is particularly timely that you should bring this forward. The second thing is the chair used the word postal caucus, and for those of us that do this every day, we know exactly what that means, and I just wanted to share with the folks here that there is a group inside the legislature that represents the coast, and we meet weekly. And through the power of us meeting, and it's the senator and the two representatives from each one of the districts, we frequently advocate things as a unit, and so it would be very useful to be able to have, if we can introduce this bill today, then have the advocacy of the Coastal Caucus working on it. And last but not least, I hope that your very thoughtful remarks have resonated with Mr. Greenwood, as they're looking for technical experts to help inform the Reedsport community, Oregon solutions process. It's clear that your in-depth knowledge of some of the impediments to moving ahead may be a resource to him. So thank you for your very thoughtful testimony.
Thank you all. Rob, I appreciate your coming at the last second. My apologies, did you have to be here? For those of you who don't know my background, I was a county commissioner in Lincoln County for 12 years and had the honor to work with Rob Burnett during that time. And he's not going to like me saying this, but I just have to tell you that he is probably the smartest person in the world that I've ever met. And our history goes back to a time when, working with our local PUD, we wanted to be partners in laying cementstone fiber optic cable and allowing us to expand the telecommunications network. You've probably heard just about all I know about this because I'm at the expertise of people who understand what we're talking about. But with our backing, Rob went up against the PC and some other regulatory entities to allow us to do both this cross-site program. So to see him be part of taking on this very complex question really, really pleases me. And there's just a couple of things that I would like to say at this point. One is that House Bill 2044 is the second bill, and that is in the works at this point, and I believe it comes before this committee. This proposed by Memorial, I did mention this week to the Coastal Caucus, and if necessary, if we don't get it in today, it would be one of my priority things. I would do anything I could to get this processing. The other thing that I would just like to mention, the Fisher Run and various related user groups, fine, and I can't remember what FINE stands for. But I thought some of those of you on the committee who have concerns about the industry and the impacts might be interested in knowing that this group is really active in looking at all of the ramifications to all of the users of the ocean. And one of the members of that committee is a good friend of mine who was mentioning something to me just recently that I find kind of unique. They're going to look at a demonstration of this single buoy and are excited about talking to those who want to put it in about the various methodologies for actually anchoring the buoy, because they think that the fishing community, there's no one that has any more experience with actually figuring out how to anchor things and make this stay where they're supposed to be. So they're excited about looking at the technology and putting it into the whole process. And I just think that's an example of the kind of input that we're getting as we move this project forward and looking at it. So I would urge the committee to
Thank you.
Mr. Bogat's excellent legal work made this appear as though it was a legislative work product. It is not. And so what I'm going to recommend, if the chair agrees, is that Representative Cowan and I go hand-in-hand as soon as we land this afternoon and get it right into legislative council. You've done all the heavy lifting. There's no reason that they can't turn this around as an official legislative work product that's the business state, and we can get it in the process by November, if not by 5 o'clock this afternoon.
I used to work at legislative council, so I draft things.
I have to say, when I saw Rob in the room, I thought, what does this have to do with him? You know? So I've got to say, the wonderful job you did with the governor's task force, I fully expect this to happen.
I have to make a comment on this. I've said that I've figured this before, because it's a massive office, but I actually tried to integrate the approaches for my ecosystem.
Well, wouldn't you rather have your legacy be the slave power? Thank you very much. Anybody have any more questions?
Madam Chair, you might want to take the sense of your committee, because I believe, based on the conversation, that we would all be interested in being co-sponsors on the Senate Memorial, or to have it done as a committee bill. We can get the mechanical stuff done this afternoon, but I just wanted to get a sense of the committee so we can make sure that we're respectful of everyone that would like to be a chief co-sponsor on this particular piece of work.
I was going to do that, and the only problem is that we're not meeting Monday to get on the committee bill. So I could plan to be a committee and use it. The only one I'm aware of right now.
We have our last and our local presentation, and Senator Johnson is somewhere in the building. Should be right here. And this will be the overview of flooding in Tillamook County and the Oregon Solutions Team assessment with Senator Johnson, Commissioner Lockhart, and Oregon Solutions staff, which was now Steve Greenwood and Dick Johnson. This should be very interesting. And then when they're finished, then we will open it up for public testimony, and we are going to adjourn at 2 o'clock sharp. So, you all can come up here. Or Senator, or you can start to have
her. She was going to take it off.
Okay.
It's okay.
Well, then I guess I'll stay. Oh, here she comes. You're up.
Oh, heaven. Okay.
You are the chef.
Let me get my gear.
Business here. Never a dull moment. So when you're ready, you may start and introduce yourself.
Is the Oregon Solutions process, and I'm going to do an extremely high-level overview of this process. And the reason that I've been bona fide to talk about this is I have been a convener on an Oregon process, two of them actually, Oregon process projects. I have in my private life supported the Oregon Solutions financially. I have been an advocate for Oregon Solutions in the legislature. And best of all, I am a beneficiary of an Oregon Solutions solution. Well before coming to the legislature, I was involved in litigation up in Columbia County. And we had the parties had just sued each other. And finally we divided to an Oregon Solutions process. And when we sat down with skilled mediators and began finding our common interests, we were able to end almost 2 decades of litigation where hundreds of thousands of dollars had been spent, if not millions. And I am very pleased to report to you that last week I was invited to come to Los Angeles and to actually speak to, this is a gravel company, and the software like on Grand. But I was invited to come to Los Angeles and speak to a convocation of aggregate producers from around the nation and talk about how we were able to find common ground on a terribly controversial issue and the fact that cooperation is better than confrontation. And so how our ends don't know our beginnings. If I had ever thought that I would be addressing this group's multinational convocation of their subsidiaries and the parent company and talk to them about the benefits of this kind of project. So the Oregon Solutions is actually a process embedded in Portland State University. Oregon Solutions creates a neutral forum for people of opposing points of view to come together to work out really serious, complicated problems. The nicest part of an Oregon Solutions initiative is that it ends up with a precedential outcome. It ends up with an outcome that is applicable in other places than just finding a common way to arrive at an end on a specific situation. It has a proven track record of success in collaborative efforts. It leverages money by bringing together the private sector, the public sector, not-for-profits, private for-profit businesses in some cases. It is a vehicle to achieve a very high level of state agency cooperation. This very effective system works on a basis of identifying a problem through an assessment process that my good friend Mr. Freeman is going to talk about, deciding if we can get all of the people who have a stake in the outcome interviewed, help them to describe a common problem, and then agree through a very elaborate process to sit together to come to a collaborative solution. And it has yielded manifold benefits in the places that I've seen it employed. The governor has to appoint a project as worthy of an Oregon Solutions fix, and Governor Kulongowski, following the floods here in Tillamook County, tapped Tillamook County as a Columbia Solution, flooding here as a, an Oregon Solution. And so that appointment has already been made. We have people on the ground right now interviewing all of the stakeholders, and Mr. Greenwood will discuss that. But I come before you, colleagues, today as an advocate for this process. I think this is unique. It certainly has changed my attitude as a legislator about how to approach problems. This is the kind of thing that obscures political muscle where the majority can rule the minority. This process obscures that kind of a response to a problem and instead says, let's get even people who can't agree that it's day out together to see if we can find common ground. So this is a very big deal, and I would submit to you that it's a new way of thinking about solving problems. So with that, I'm going to ask Mr. Greenwood to describe a little bit of what's happening on the ground here in Tillamook, dealing with a decades-old problem, lots of emotions all around the question of how do we even define what the issue is. And I'll be available for questions in the larger community solution application.
I have to say at this point, I'm on another community solutions team or Oregon Solutions team effort on rendering. So it's a new thing for me, and it's lucky for Tillamook County. We have two big problems that are going to be handled by both of your representative and your senator.
I'm Steve Greenwood. I work with the Oregon Solutions Program and members of the committee. I am very happy to be here to talk about our assessment process for the Tillamook County. You heard Tillamook County Sheriff Todd Anderson say in his testimony that when he, quote, sat down with everyone who was involved in the emergency preparedness area, that they were able to do a better job. And that really, I guess I'm going to let the secret out, that's really the fundamental secret in the principle of what we do. That if you can get all of the right people in the same room together and get them to work together, that you can accomplish great things. I would add one thing to focus on bringing people together who have conflict. And certainly one of the elements of governance is deciding what you want to do and getting people to agree on it. But the second element is really, and equally important, is implementation and actually getting things done. So once people agree, then the question becomes, okay, so how do we pull the resources together and how do we work together to actually make this happen? And I think that's also an important part of the Oregon Solutions Program. We have become, in the last couple of years, a primary mechanism for state agencies, and I would say also federal agencies, to work with local communities to address local community problems or issues. And I want to start out by emphasizing we are not an engineering firm. We do not come with a preconceived solution mapped out. What we bring is a process and a structure that we can help people work. So that's what we do. And as Senator Johnson said, what we have found is that the best solutions are not brought just by government or by one level of government, but by various levels of government, by the business sector, by the civic sector, all working together. We have a number of projects throughout the state where we have utilized this
sure if maybe I can take it. Don't you clean up another fly at it? Why? Probably would be applicable to a flood. First of all, this is not a legislative process. So the fact that you've been in the legislature, matter of the record, Betsy Johnson, State Senator, District 16. So this is not something that you would have seen in the normal course of your legislative business.
Yeah.
And what this is, and its applicability to flooding, I'll come back to in just a second, what this really is a process to solve problems. This is a framework when it appears that traditional efforts are unlikely to result in a solution and the implementation of a solution. So this is a process that is owned by the National Center for Policy Consensus. National Policy Consensus Center. They ought to make a sentence. That is housed at Portland State. And the reason that it's housed at Portland State is an academic institution that doesn't have a dog in the fight. It is a neutral forum by virtue of its status as a university. It doesn't come to any problem with a preconceived solution, but rather it houses this process. And this process can be applied to very complicated problems across a vast array of issues, whether it's getting agencies to cooperate, and that would clearly involve state government, or whether it's getting some solutions worked out on how wave energy is going to be implemented, and there's an Oregon Solution Project there. Whether it worked on the latest one that I did was a thing called the Ports of the Sea Trail. It got more than 30 participants, including a whole bunch of state agencies, to figure out how in a very short time frame we would build a trail from Fort Clatsop down to the ocean, replicating the line that Lewis and Clark may have taken 200 years ago. So don't think of this as a state program, because it isn't. And it's unlikely that you would have heard about it before, and that's one of the reasons that we're using the portal of this committee to explain both to the public behind me, who hopefully are going to be beneficiaries of the Oregon solution, but also explaining to the legislature that this asset exists in order to try to find solutions to these complex problems where it looks as though traditional efforts are unlikely to result in a good outcome. And what we're really talking to you about is how do you bring people together to define the problem? How do you bring people together, even folks that might not agree, to work on a solution? Once they figure out the solution, then how do we leverage assets to implement the solution? And whether it's leveraging assets to build something, or leveraging assets to do something, or leveraging assets to develop policy papers that might later come back to the legislature. There is, at the end of an Oregon Solutions process, some deliverable that has to be paid for. And the other good thing about Oregon Solutions is it doesn't come to government and say, fix this. It doesn't come to the private sector and say, the burden's on you guys if you want it. It is a mechanism to bring these people who maybe want to own a piece of the solution to come and do the implementation piece. So the fact that you haven't heard about it in four sessions it doesn't particularly surprise me. This is a new way of thinking about complex problems, and we are applying this vehicle to a complex problem here in Tillamook. And as you see this unfold, Mr. Greenwood is going to describe more of the preparatory elements that are underway right now. And then Commissioner Labhart is going to comment on what it is we hope to achieve in with this particular solution application on this issue here today.
Thank you very much.
There's two of them. And we talked a minute, Debbie, well, just tell it like it is. But I just, my last question is there money in here? Is the national politics in the
No, you're not being asked to spend it though.
They don't give you any money, but they pay for Mr. Greenwood.
They pay for Mr. Greenwood.
But otherwise, to bring people to the table or anything else, there is no more money, just Mr. Greenwood.
Well, I want to be absolutely accurate about this. They have a staff, and they have asked for funding from a variety of different places, and it is not out of the realm of possibility that they'll ask for funding from the legislature. But they are uniquely good at getting private sector grants to run their whole operation. It's a national effort under the heading of the National Center. Oregon Solutions is a subset of the National Center. But what you are hearing today is the description of a process. You are not hearing a pitch for money. Now, in the interest of absolute accuracy, I am going to come back into the legislature and advocate for funding for Oregon Solutions in a global application, not just in the application of let's come down and fix Tillamook's problems. There are other problems all over the state that will profit from this kind of collaborative problem solving. And it is just one more tool in the legislature's toolbox to say, let's send other people, private sector, for-profit business, not-for-profit business, let's send them out to work on problems. But somebody's got to make sure that Mr. Greenwood and his colleagues get a paycheck at the end of the day. They go out and they hustle up a lot of their own money. But it may be that the legislature would find it in their budget somewhere, Oregon Economic and Community Development, principally, to see if there was a couple of bucks for it. So I want to be accurate. But what you're hearing today is a description of the process. We're not asking this committee for a dollar.
Representative Nelson, if I could just add one thing to that. The normal process for how we get involved is someone in the community or some organization or talking to the government and say, well, we've got this issue here, and we can't solve it by ourselves. Maybe we could if there were a broader group that we could work with. They will come to us, so they will come to the government and say, we would like to be designated as a person. The way it has worked, take a look at it and say, well, we think we can do this, we think it might work, and here's about how much it costs. And they then figure out among themselves how they can come up with the money to pay for that process. And then come to us, and then the governor has to designate it as an Oregon Solutions project, and that, among other things, then brings a little bit higher priority for state agencies to come to the table to help.
Let me just amplify one other thing so that particularly as this concept is new to some of you. The fact that the governor designates it is not a partisan issue. It could be any governor. It could be a Republican governor. It could be a Democrat governor. What we need is a gatekeeper because these are very high-level projects, and what we have is a gatekeeper who deems the project of significance enough to actually nominate it as an Oregon Solutions process. So I don't want you to think that there's a partisan aspect to this, because there isn't. It simply is a way to keep all sorts of problems from coming forward in a kind of disorderly way. This is a very stylized process that gets a project tapped as an Oregon Solution, and the governor is the gatekeeper to get tapped. But it has, there's no partisan aspect to this at all.
And what are some of the opportunities far, we've interviewed about 30 people, business owners, citizens, farmers, local government, state government, and I think some federal government officials. Yesterday, in fact, Nelson, who's on our assessment team, met with Sheriff Peterson and a number of people on the emergency preparedness team that we talked about earlier. It's a little too soon for me to tell you where I think that the assessment is going and if you're looking at it. But what I can say is that unanimously at this point, all the people we interviewed said we really want to have the process.
I read that local paper today in Raleigh, and I read it. There was a letter to the editor about that stuff. And the question asked was, you know, you all are interviewing these 30 specific individuals. The question is, how did they get chosen, and why weren't there more? And I'm just asking this question. And my second question was, this is a local, regional question that I think we need to be addressed, and I wish you all the luck, hope we can help you in that way. But with this, and there's a clear, I think some of you are talking about a specific issue, things like aggregate producers and farmers or dairy growers. That's rather narrow. How broad do we go there? Like, is this process used for something like immigration monitoring, or is that just too far out? So it's a tough question. The local one, for these aggregate
growers. I'm sorry. My work on Chris Reich to address the letter to the editor. The original article that this gentleman...
Which I did not read.
The original article wasn't there. The Oregon Solutions team, specifically Steve Greenwood, says, hey, I'd like to hit the ground running. Can you give us a list of names that we can start the process for contact? So what we did, we just took the address book of the county commissioners and gave him almost every name in the address book. We didn't show any bias or say, oh, we didn't do this person versus this person. Now, of course, we knocked off some people like Senator Wyden, but we gave him an initial list, and that's all it was an initial list. In fact, I talked to Dick Townsend yesterday, and he had a lot of interviews. Every person that he talks to, he asks, who else should I talk to? So, you know, there's potentially, you know, is this a conspiracy going on? Just interviewing this person and working on them? There is nothing like that. This is a mutual process. They're trying to talk to a broad variety of folks. And so those that may perceive that, you know, you're only interviewing people that have a certain point of view, not so.
Madam Chair, just for the record, I didn't mean by that. I just happened to read the paper. And I feel myself sinking further in trouble here.
The good senator's staring at me saying, shut up, shopper, you crap-loving animal.
Thank you.
If I could also address that question, I think it's one of the reasons why I wanted to emphasize that this is an assessment that we're going through right now to develop a process, not to develop recommendations about what needs to be done. And I do hear that some people think that what we're doing here is kind of important solutions to kind of figure out here in this assessment process. What is it that needs to be done? And that's not the case. What we're really trying to do is simply find out what are the various issues that are out there that need to be addressed in this.
Madam Chair, if you let me respond to that, I would, based on my experience with Oregon Solutions, recommend that they not take on a project as global as immigration. And I'm not being facetious when I say that. Where it works best is the ability to localize something. And when I say localize, they address a local issue. If it yields a template for other communities to learn from that experience, that's the value added as far as I'm concerned. So the question, again, going back to the wave energy that's being convened down in Reefport, they will address some very specific problems to that locale and that set of issues. If the Oregon Solutions process yields a template that Lincoln County can employ and Tillamook County can employ, why solve the same problem 10 times? If there's value that flows out of one process to solve something, let's glean that and keep it for other locations and applications. But my advice, were I advising Oregon Solutions, would be to stay away from these huge global projects where that sucking sound you hear is all the money in the world going into the hole. I think they have found their niche in these more isolated, and the Oregon in Oregon Solutions really needs work.
Thank you.
Would a project be, how can we dairy farmers find out if we got bacteria in our milk?
Madam Chair, may I answer that respectfully? That's why God made laboratories.
Okay. Would that be a project that they would take on and say, okay, we've got to find a solution to help these poor farmers, you know?
Respectfully, Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, if I were queen, that would not be a project they could take on. It's too narrow an issue. It's too easy to get the answer. If the question is, does milk have bacteria, you go down to the milk laboratory, and it's either yes or no. An Oregon Solutions kind of problem that would affect the dairy industry is, what do you do about the impact of the loss of agricultural land in a natural resource-based county like Tillamook County with urban encroachment and the right to farm and those sorts? It would ask a more philosophical question of, how do we protect an agricultural economy in a natural resource-based county? It wouldn't ask a yes-no question about, is there bacteria in the milk? I can go figure that out myself by putting the milk in the car and driving to the lab.
With a follow-up, could I ask one of this question? Yeah, I just want to know, what is this question for this project we're working on now? What is the question? How do we recover from the floods in Tillamook? Is that it? Or what is the question?
I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to explain the process, and then what they have been awarded a project to deal by the governor, and now they're in the process of going through their process.
What is the process?
I feel like you didn't quite get into that, Madam Chair. I think it's a good question. One of the things that we want to make sure as part of this assessment is that everybody's talking about the same question. At this point, the way I would describe it is how to reduce the impacts of flooding in Tillamook County.
At this point, I just want to take the chair's prerogative and ask how many people in the audience are going to want to submit public testimony, because we only have another half an hour, and I'm not sure how long the presenters need to finish their presentation. I want to make sure people see it. 1, 2, 3. Okay. All right. So will you be able to wrap it up in about 15 minutes? I don't want to intimidate you. Okay. So, Commissioner Lev.
For the record, Mark Lev, our county commissioner, I'm intimidated. Oh. No, it takes a lot to intimidate me. I have to rapid fire through this. First, I'd like to kind of go a little bit global. Senator Johnson mentioned that this is the Oregon and the Northern Solutions process. I observed her in an interview last Friday with a videotape program to take Oregon Solutions national. This is an effort that would go to other legislators and say, hey, you can't get problems solved at the legislative level, and you're not getting solved at the local level. Here is a method that Oregon is using somewhat successfully, I believe, and you may want to consider that. And so she was being interviewed for this national organization. Here's how it works, and I thought she was going to have a job of pushing it. But that's kind of a global stuff. We're talking to you, but this is the thing that, in my opinion, can be used in Oregon to solve both the problems, but also can be used nationally. She's being used as a poster, woman.
You don't have to go through the governor contract.
right now in Oregon, the process is that the gatekeeper to get into Oregon is the office of the governor, set aside who that person is. And the other thing that we're really advocating is Nebraska solutions, Missouri solutions. We want to try to replicate the success that Oregon has had in other places. And so that's what we were pitching.
I'm going to give you a quick example. What Oregon Solutions does is provide a neutral forum. It provides proven experience and success for collaborative efforts. It has private sector participation. It has state agency cooperation. I can guarantee you when the governor says that we're going to have an Oregon Solutions project, the state agency, they're going to get in line and say, yes, sir, I will participate. So that's a key for me. And we've already got pretty much a declaration when Senator Johnson and I went to the Corps of Engineers and got their declaration, they would be participants in this program too. It also has a declaration of cooperation of the parties coming together and saying, okay, we're going to work together to cooperate. And really what they call the effective system is the project team using the Oregon Solutions, community governance approach that demonstrated the ability to deliver sustainable projects in a short period of time with a limited number of meetings. That's the meaning. So, I'm trying to narrow this down a little bit, but I want to be more global. So, if I'm sitting here at the end of the Marines and Marines and the community, I think I want to use this thing in a better way. A classic example, and this is just me talking, a classic example is the King rescue, or the failure of the process to work there. You've got problem down there that's not working. You've got county, state, federal, local agencies that didn't, in my opinion, collaborate and work together to affect a solution down there that could have saved maybe Mr. King's life. And an example of that is you have a lot of turf fires going on. Well, I'm in charge. No, I'm crazy. Well, no, the federal government's in charge. No, the state's in charge. Well, they always pump off their chest and they try to do what they think is in their best interest. Well, and so you can bring the legislature and say, well, we'll legislate a fix for that. And if you cannot legislate a fix for that, you've got to bring people together. And Sheriff Anderson brought that as a classic example of how you bring people together to work on a collaborative solution. Now, I don't know what Oregon Solutions will look for that or not, but the issue that we have to tell them, and I'm going to be real blunt, is there's three things that Tillamook County is known for. We have we're known for three and ocean breaks. We're also known, when you think of Tillamook, you think of the Tillamook County Freedom Association. And I puff out my chest at the time somebody says this, and I'm really proud of it. What I'm not proud of is, oh, you're the ones that flood every year. Oh, yeah, you're the ones that always flood. You're the ones that are always on TV. You're the ones that are always showing all this damage. And that's what I care about. And I don't want to be known for, oh, you're the ones that flood. And so that's how it is basic for me. We have tried to address our flooding problem. I call it unacceptable flooding problems. We're always going to have floods. We're going to have floods. We have no plan there. We're always going to have floods. What I'm concerned about is unacceptable flooding. And unacceptable flooding is in the eyes of the beholder. And we've tried, and I call them random acts of kindness, because we've done some really good things. We've received significant FEMA money from emergency management, and we've done good things. We've elevated structures. Director Campbell said that we bought out businesses. I would call it buying out businesses. We've relocated businesses. We are not in the business of government coming in and buying them out and throwing them away. We relocate businesses. And the business voluntarily does that. The government doesn't go to them and say, you need to relocate. The business comes to government and says, I would like to relocate my business, or I'd like to elevate my business. Nobody's being bought out in a real way. We don't want that. We want economic development. So we've done some things. We had a flood summit several months ago, which Mark Pagel, who is with the law firm of Swati Williams and Wilder, facilitated. We had a whole room full of people. Some of these people in this room are here. Flooding is a tough, contentious issue. There are a lot of strong emotions and opinions about how to address flooding. Get the government out of the way. Get the government out of the way. We'll address flooding. Just dredge the bay. Dredge the rivers. You know, move everything out of the way. I mean, just very, very strong, strident people, good people, that feel that this is the way to solve the problem. And yet you still, besides these random acts of kindness and doing some elevations and some relocations and some cow pads and minor things, you're not addressing the bigger issues, which is unacceptable. And so the approach that some of the Habitat is very good was with Senator Johnson and myself, and he said, you know, would you be willing, and Senator Johnson was the cheerleader of this, we are both political, have our necks stuck out, in my opinion, on monologue. Because the community is saying, okay, you think you can fix this thing both ways. And so the community, I believe, is behind this project. Now, so the reason that we're stuck out of monologue on this thing is we don't know if it's going to work. We do not know whether this is going to work. But we're willing to put the buck, the eggs in the basket, a huge amount of eggs in the basket. And so the bar is set pretty high. And that's what's scary, I think, for the solutions is the bar is set so high right now that we're going to get success. We're talking about success. And it also talks about successes that she's seen. And they'll talk about the positives. But this one's going to be amazing. This one is going to be extremely tough because there are such polarized views on what should be the solution that have very legitimate, strong feelings about it. But we believe, or I believe, as the Senator Johnson would have written, that if we can come together in a mutual forming process, a mutual convener that doesn't care about the results, that can help us through a process, that maybe there's some low hanging fruit out there that we can grab and start addressing unacceptable results. Traditional efforts have not worked, and particularly frustrating for me at the federal government. Traditional efforts, the state, I believe, has done a very good job. Local has done a fairly good job, but we're having roadblocks at the federal level. And so I think with the commitment of the federal folks to help us, we can get through to some of these solutions. So this is going to be a tough one. This is, nobody's saying that it's a success yet, but I think we're willing to stick our necks out and say, well, let's give this a try. And it's not going to be just gentle talk. We're pushing this thing big time. The county's putting in money to it. The city is also a signer to this, and so the state is the signer, Betsy Johnson signed it, and sent the letter to the governor. Here's what I'd like to just read the letter from the governor. And it says, based on your request, I have asked the staff of Oregon Solutions to move forward with the assessment and determine a collaborative process to do this assessment. Conducting a thorough assessment is a critical step prior to the formal designation of the Oregon Solutions project. That involves framing the project scope, as Steve said, the goals, evaluating the current level of community support and or conflict, along with identifying public sector, private sector, very important, and city partners, and the potential resources within the project. I am hopeful that Oregon Solutions can provide a neutral forum and a structured process for your community and bring both public and private sector partners together to address unacceptable flooding issues in the county.
Recommend that this is not right for a solutions process. These are highly skilled people out in the field right now trying to really feel is there the possibility that we can get to yes. If they come back and say yes, then they will set the table. They will set the table for who ought to be there. And the conveners have no more standing than anybody else. We just are the folks that have called for the project and have gotten the governor's imprimatur on the project. And I noticed while we were presenting, we have been joined by Mayor McPeters, who in all likelihood will also be a convener to make sure that the city's interests are adequately inserted in the process. But that's what they're doing right now.
Any of the actions.
open the public testimony. I'm going to excuse myself for a moment. Senator Brown has called me back when the committee staff and I were out asking for assistance to be sure that we could get this joint memorial work through. I have reached out to the majority leader. She's called me back, and as a courtesy, I just want to tell her that
we want you to come back.
Yes.
So this time, we'll open up the public testimony, and we have 3 minutes. And I think we have four people who at least raised their hands and leaving one space at the end or one and a half spaces at the end. You don't have to use all your time, but try not to use somebody else's time too. Unless there's time at the end, and then you can have some free throw. So if you would identify yourself for the record.
We'll go ahead and get started. My name is Tilda Travis Jones. I'm the staff person for the Tillamook Bay Habitat and Estuary Improvement District that has been mentioned. You've been hearing what a stellar public structure we have here, the leadership we have with our representatives, our senators, our commissioners, our sheriff, our emergency management, all of the people that we have that take leadership and helping Tillamook County to be disaster prepared. And I want to say that that's the public sector. I work for the private sector, business people, farmers, property owners, house owners at the marketing city of Tillamook, and they are also stellar leaders. And the two of them working together that has gotten us this far. And our district is out in front, specifically on the flooding problem, the disaster preparedness in general. And I use Japan as our model. Japan is noted as the most disaster-prepared country in the world, understandably, and they always tout that it's because their public and their private sector work together. So with that, to keep the balance to our district members, some of whom are here sitting in the back, and some of our advisors. We're always willing to meet and work with everyone to, we're on a mission to reduce our flood problems, specifically the economic impacts, but we get pretty traumatized. And so, for the overall health of our community, we've been focused on our biggest disaster problem thus far being flooding. And the symptom to you can buy the three main policies in place now are property buyouts, elevations, and relocation. Those three solutions address the symptom. We know from our experience of 150 years, some of our people have been here that long, through the generations, and through our education and experience, we feel that the most cost-effective solution to our problem is infrastructure, private and public infrastructure, specifically our levees, our high gates, our culverts. We feel that we have assessed our area and have a $1.5 million solution to the, what has been at millions of dollars in problems. Simple example is that in the November flood, one levee broke. That was an $80,000-plus problem that caused $11.5 million worth of damage. So we contend that that all of us working together at the local, the private, the public, the state level, the federal level, given policies that we need more flexible policies. We need to be able to get our permits to maintain our infrastructure. And we need to be able to get grants and funding for our infrastructure.
Thank you.
$600. We're talking hundreds of thousands.
They were ready. If 21st Century had quoted me to set up the entire Oregon coast, seven counties, 350 miles, 20, 50, 60, 70, 80 jurisdictions, $40,000 to set the whole system up. In fact, and by the time the other vendors came in, it was starting to look like $30,000, $20,000, and then a certain number of cents per call. I'm telling you, insanely low. I've had meetings with first responders, and I'd start running out some of the numbers, and I had it much more current. And they'd say, well, God, well, I can get that out of my spare change account. And they'd say, but again, it was just getting everybody to sign up. And when I talked to about six or seven vendors from all over the country, they started calling me. They're trying to create these region-wide systems because they make so much sense. And the technology's here. Let's do it statewide. That's why I'm so I've rung the bell on it. We don't need to go into it further here, right? Let's please make sure there's a vehicle that we can discuss this further.
Yeah, we're
the solution's here. We don't need it. The solution. There's a solution. So let's get it done.
Okay.
And I've been counseling jurisdictions sign short-term contracts with vendors because we were going to have a statewide system in place that they would want to buy into later. And I do applaud this county for going forward when it did. I was here that night. We sat around and talked about it. And I was really good. Go forward. We're not going to get it. We can't hurt all the cats. We're going to have to figure out a different way to do it. Thank you.
I think it's just begs asking, did you go to where the cats live? Did you go to AOC and LOC? Or were you doing one-off contacts with counties? I mean, I'm finding a sense of disconnect there.
Well, I started working at within the Oregon coast. There's one, you know, the first place to do reverse 911 on the Oregon coast was Florence, through the western, through the 911 program in Lane County. So it's happened in the past, but it was very expensive early on. And again, as soon as I had the revelation by working with this interim committee and finding out that Montana had the statewide system at that point, and I thought the committee was, Debbie, I thought you had a bill, and I thought it was time to take care of. So that's why I talked to Judith earlier and said, don't you have a statewide bill in the hopper on this? And she said, well, no, we don't. What we do, or is we defer because we're going to do something with Owen? It matters. I could give you a lot more information, but I just gave up on it because I knew I wasn't getting anywhere, and I knew a statewide system would work. I'd say there are about maybe 10 jurisdictions now in the state that have, you know, have some kind of reverse 911 program. Thank you.
Thank you.
We brought a barge up there from Hawaii and loaded a pineapple. close and going, Bart. We're clear up south of town here and unloaded. Today, we can't even get a rowboat up there at a low tide. I can tell you what it is. I think I can tell you, be honest, I lived here since 50, and it's probably still in 4 feet in the lower rivers. And I'm not advocating dredging, but I think we need to manage somehow to manage the resources to be able to get some of it back to the community. I have a soil and water person. I would like to see a royalty out of the gravel so we can use it for matches, to match with different projects for habitat. It seems like I always get in a bang when I try to talk about that with agencies. But I think we need to look at managing our whole county river courses. I mean, managing the gravel boy. I'm not saying a butcher. I'm going to say again, I'm a avid fisherman, and I want to keep it that way for my future generation. Thank you.
Any questions for me?
I just want to say, Madam Chair, I like to fish, and we all use gravel. So yeah. We've got something. Let's go get it.
Gus has probably attended more meetings in Salem than anybody I've ever seen, as far as you're very well represented in Salem by Mr. Miller here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for these kind words, and we really respect your support for getting in Salem. Madam Chair, committee members, we really want to welcome you to Tillamook, the land of many waters, big breezes, and today we even offered you patches of sunlight. So I know you had a good flight coming over.
I want to make name for the record, too.
For the record, A.D. Gus Meyer. I'm sorry. I'm not going to make you like this. I want to bring two issues to court. The first issue is an issue of disaster preparedness. And you'll notice I took it one step above emergency preparedness. I want to raise the bar just a little bit. We here in Tillamook County are getting more and more expertise at handling our nuisance disasters. But our major catastrophic disasters, we still have an opportunity to grow. Tillamook County has been reported we could have from 40,000 to 160,000 guests here on any one day. And for that reason, we need the tsunami sirens to give people alerts. We need reverse 911, which is an adequate recovery. And we need mitigation. Emergency preparedness does not stop at emergency preparedness. We must put on with Oregon Solutions, and we must find collaborative solutions to reduce the level of impact to this area. You heard Mark Labhart talk to an $80,000 project that caused almost $11 million of FEMA charges. It's that sort of thing that we really need to get down to as a community and address. One more thing I want to throw in. I represent the private sector as a citizen today, and I hear locally that we, under Homeland Security, are very low on the radar screen. We don't get appreciated for terrorism, and Homeland Security ties a good number of their grants to the terrorists. We must have tsunami natural disaster major support. Darlene Healy has a bill that she introduced last year in House Bill 4200, and I understand it's been rewritten this year to provide catastrophic disaster assistance to coastal communities, not just Tillamook, but to the whole coastal world. And we need that. Projects. I'll get down to some two minor projects and then I'll be quiet. But generators. Generators for continuity of service. Wired in generators. for the wiring and the backfeed switches can cost as much as a generator itself. We need generators. You heard Todd talk to that we had generator problems during our last windstorm. Our last windstorm, one more time, showed us that Tillamook County can very quickly be divided into five isolated communities. You've got Highway 6 coming in. You've got Highway 101, north and south. You block those highways, and you've got isolation of communities. So we need rapid disaster support. If you look at the 40,000 to 160,000 people coming in here, we understand the legislating and other viewpoints of emergency management saying, locally, you have to take care of yourself for 7 to 12 days. We're a community of 26,000 people, and we can take care of ourselves. But when you bring in 40,000 people, our grocery stores operate on a truck-to-shelf system. So they're planning for a normal day-to-day operation. And you just can't sustain a whole community with that many guests with a trucking policy, a grocery store policy, up from truck-to-shelf. There is no local stuff. And I want to just bring this up and to open your eyes. And emergency preparedness is great, but without mitigation to reduce the problems, we're still going to have some major problems, especially at the catastrophic level. Thank you very much. Any questions?